Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What's good, people? I'm Connor Mathis, filling in for Al Martin. It's a very nice hump day today, and we got a ton of stuff to get to on today's show. We got a developing story with Urban Meyer. We've got Johnny Manziel news. We've got Draymond Green getting into a fight. Whole bunch of stuff today. In studio, we got Alec Rio running the board for now. He might come into studio and talk a little bit later. And my understanding, Ian Hawley will be coming in too. So looks to be a great show. We're going to hit it up with your current sports quick hit headliners to start things off. Kick things off, we'll talk about Draymond Green getting into a fight with Tristan Thompson. So for the past few weeks, we've had rumors that there was a fight in an LA nightclub between two NBA players around the time of the ESPYs. And yesterday, multiple reports broke that an altercation involving Golden State Warriors forward Draymond Green and Cleveland Cavaliers center Tristan Thompson broke out in a beef that carried over all the way from this last season's NBA Finals, in which Tristan Thompson famously said to Draymond Green to meet him in the streets after the game. Now, Jason McEichter of the Big League broke down the incident on Twitter yesterday. Here's what he had to say. Draymond apparently went up to apologize to Tristan for what happened in Game 4 of the Finals. Tristan Thompson said, "Nah, man," and Draymond tried again. "Come on, I didn't mean anything." Then, wow, Tristan leveled him with a punch. Draymond didn't go down. Now, according to Jason, Draymond was not the aggressor in this situation. He was simply trying to make peace. Tristan felt embarrassed by the finals diss and just went off. We'll have a little bit more of that when we get done with the headliners, but there's a whole lot of conflicting reports, a whole lot of different people saying different things. So right now I'm going to throw to Alec Rio for some more of our headliners. Alec?
Okay, we got MSU Athletics announcing the 2018 Hall of Fame class. We have former Michigan State quarterback Jimmy Rye as one of five Spartans selected for induction into the MSU Athletics Hall of Fame, the school announced yesterday. Dale Anderson, Rachel Miller, Bill Werwein, and Savatheta Koch are the other honorees to be inducted on September 27th. The Celebrate 2018 weekend also includes the Varsity Letter Jacket presentation. Hall of Fame inductees will then be honored during the MSU Central Michigan football game on September 29th. Bill Beekman had this to say in a statement. "I am in awe at the list of credentials for this year's Hall of Fame class. This group has combined for 14 All-American honors, 12 individual Big Ten championships, 6 individual NCAA championships, and 3 team NCAA championships. In addition, they have captured Olympic gold, been recognized for academic excellence, helped launch a new sport at MSU, and perhaps most importantly, been a key figure in the integration of college football across the nation."
All right, thank you, Alec. And other news, Tigers topped the Reds. Despite only cashing in three hits total, it was all the Tigers needed as they topped the Cincinnati Reds 2-1. A strong performance by Tigers starting pitcher Matthew Boyd was absolutely crucial to the victory. Despite finding himself in an unexpected pitching duel with Reds right-hander Homer Bailey, who finished with an eight-inning complete game while allowing only three hits and two earned runs, Boyd did not allow a single Red to score over eight innings and 105 pitches of work. And bad news for the Mets. You might have had a bad day yesterday, but checking out the score of the New York Mets, Washington Nationals games might have made your day a whole lot better, as the Mets had an awful outing. New York found themselves in a 7-0 hole in the first inning. The runs kept coming from Washington as they had four consecutive three-run innings after that to make it 19-0 in the fifth. The score ended up being 25-4. That's not a typo. 25-4. This Mets loss to the Nats was one of the worst in their history. The only other team in MLB history to have that kind of deficit through five innings was back in 1876 when the Hartford Dark Blues had a 21-0 lead at that point over the New York Mutinals? Did I say that right? Mutinals?
Mutuals.
Mutuals. All right. This is per ESPN stats and info. Now, this should make you Pistons fans real happy here. Stanley Johnson is working out with Carmelo Anthony. It's been reported that Stanley Johnson was working out with none other than Melo. That's right, Carmelo Anthony, to fulfill his potential. And people forget that the Pistons drafted Mr. Stanley Johnson that high. It's the offseason, but there's encouraging signs. He's rained some three-pointers down in Drew League, Animal Summer Pro-Am Basketball League in Los Angeles. He posted his Instagram account and noted that NBA trainer Chris Brickley, that he was working out with Melo, who just recently signed a deal with the Rockets. And again, I'm going to send this one back over to Alec Rio to read some more of these headliners.
All right. So, they say that secrets don't make friends, and Matthew Stafford's got some explaining to do. A deep, dark secret no one was ever supposed to find out until his buddy and former Detroit Lions quarterback Drew Stanton gleefully spilled the beans. Stafford once kept a recreational vehicle, that's right, an RV, for his fellow Lions QBs as a getaway during the grueling days of training camp. This information surfaced only because Stanton is in camp with the Browns. He and Tyrod Taylor had a rules committee meeting for QBs and instructed this year's number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield, to rent a similar RV during camp. Next up, we got Jim Caldwell to the XFL. Jim Caldwell has joined a panel that is helping advise the people rebooting the XFL, according to Pro Football Talk. The league, headed by Vince McMahon, is expected to resume play in 2020. XFL Commissioner Oliver Luck assembled a committee that will help shape the rules and style of play for the upstart league, which wants to have a fast-paced game with few interruptions. In addition to Caldwell and Fox, committee members include former pro quarterback Doug Flutie, sports technology innovator Bill Squadron, and concussions expert Kevin Guskiewicz. Now, see, this is interesting to me, Connor, because Jim Caldwell is known for his soft style play, you know, with the Lions, with his tenure with the Lions. And when you think about it, the XFL was a crazy league when it came to physicality. You know, they had that scramble for the ball to whoever gets the ball first, you know, they had that. And there were not really many rules involving hard hits in the XFL when it was during its prime.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. And then they brought on John Fox, too. That's another NFL head coach known for being more conservative, more by the book. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. All right, and we got Johnny Manziel news. Johnny Manziel will make his first start in the CFL Friday night after sitting on the bench as a backup for six games, Montreal Alouettes coach Mike Sherman told Canadian reporters Tuesday. Now, Manziel is actually going to be making this start against the team that traded him. And here is Johnny Manziel on his return to the starting role. All right, I guess we don't have that one up yet. All right, no worries, but we'll just keep going. Manziel played in two preseason games for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. That's the team that traded him to Montreal. And then he also participated in the experimental spring league in April, which is a league that tries to help players get back to professional levels, even the NFL, the CFL, and other leagues like that. But this Friday's game will be the most substantial football outing since the Cleveland Browns released Johnny Football in 2015. And for our final quick hit headliner here, we'll talk a little bit about this developing story around Urban Meyer. When asked at this year's Big Ten Media Days, Ohio State coach Urban Meyer said he was unaware of a 2015 domestic violence incident involving his former wide receivers coach, Zach Smith, and his now ex-wife. According to Meyer, quote, "I got a text last night that something happened in 2015 and there was nothing wrong," adding, "I don't know who creates a story like this." However, Brett McMurphy reported today that through a string of interviews and text messages that he uncovered that Meyer did in fact know about the 2015 incident in which Smith was arrested for felonious assault and domestic violence of his then wife. And again, we'll get to that. We'll break down that story a little bit more. But those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please call us at 517-355-9527. Share what's on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or tweet the show directly at WKR_sports. Let's keep pushing. All right, so the first story I really want to kind of break down here is the Draymond Green Tristan Thompson scuffle that they had. It's just a weird story in general to begin with. Apparently, this happened at an ESPYs after party that was somehow associated with LeBron. We've got a ton of different perspectives on this. I was watching High Noon today, and apparently, Draymond was not the angel that some of these other reports are portraying him as. Apparently, he was chirping throughout the night. There were several other parties that the two, him and Tristan Thompson, were attending beforehand, and it just kind of was a continuation of what had gone on in the NBA Finals that had boiled over to throwing hands, basically. Again, it's a crazy story. And you have some people saying Draymond was trying to apologize, trying to make good on the past beef that the two had, and then you have others that there was a mutual back and forth between the two, and then there's another report that just surfaced that apparently LeBron and Kevin Durant had to break up the fight between the two. So again, just a kind of a wild story to begin with. I mean, Alec, what do you think about this? It's just crazy.
Yeah, to be honest, I was surprised that Draymond Green wasn't the one who started it, because you think of all of his antics in the NBA, you know, with Steven Adams and, you know, kicking people in the groin, you know, you'd think that he would be the aggressor here. But I was surprised to see that Draymond Green was trying to, you know, take the high road and, you know, offer an apology, saying, hey, like, I know we had beef previously in the playoffs, you know, but I just want to make it up to you, strictly business, you know. But Draymond Green must have said something like really that must have hit home to Tristan Thompson during the playoffs for him to react this way at the nightclub to say, hey, no, we still got the beef going on. Like, I don't care if you're trying to offer this apology. Like, he must have just got really mad at something that Draymond Green said.
Well, yeah, and one of the other reports, again, coming from ESPN's High Noon, was that apparently Draymond was dropping stuff about Khloe Kardashian, who, if you all don't know, has a relationship with Tristan Thompson. So I mean, it's just kind of funny that it lasted as long as it did. I mean, I think we can all agree that in that finals, we kind of saw like they almost got into like really bad fights twice. Like, I think once in game one, once in game four. But to see it hold on for this long, and it well into the off season. It's just kind of crazy to me. I mean,
yeah, I think definitely when Kanye West dropped that name drop on Tristan Thompson, you know, talking about that whole situation, I think that kind of kept him on edge. But like, I think now it probably boiled over, you know, seeing Draymond Green again at the club.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I'm going to change gears a little bit from NBA to CFL news. Like I said earlier, Manziel will be making his first professional start his first professional new look Johnny Manziel start. And I'm be honest with you, I'm not sold that this is a new look Johnny Manziel. You know, he came out a couple months ago talking about how he's a changed man and come out with more accountability, and then ends up playing the spring league, does all right in the spring league, gets a deal with the Hamilton Tiger Cats in the CFL. But I mean, it was a story I saw, Alec, and I don't know if you saw this too, but a little bit after he signed, he immediately went back from like, oh, I'm taking responsibility for my life, I'm taking responsibility for my past. He immediately shifted gears and like threw blame at the Cleveland Browns organization, saying, oh, well, they didn't do enough to hold me accountable. And, you know, they didn't do their job in teaching me in the NFL. And I mean, it just kind of seems like he went back on his word, and that doesn't sit well with me. And, you know, the other thing too is, he wasn't good enough in the NFL. Like, I mean, he, for as incredible as he was in college, in the NFL, his tenure started off, I remember, with a preseason game where he flipped off the Washington Redskins bench. When he actually did end up playing, it wasn't anything remarkable. It wasn't anything like groundbreaking. And then he goes to Hamilton, he's not even the starting quarterback, he's a backup. And the only reason why I think now that he's being considered a starting quarterback is, A, the Montreal Alouettes are awful. They are bottom of the barrel CFL. And two, and B, he's got one of his former coaches, Mike Sherman, leading the way. So again, I think he's really got like an easy route here as to getting in. I don't think necessarily that he is up to par with what you would look for in a starting quarterback. I mean, Alec, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, he definitely showed a great example of not keeping your composure during games, like, especially during his tenure at the Browns. I definitely think he still has a long way to go in terms of like learning, like mannerisms and stuff like that. He definitely has to prove himself on the field too, because this is his first professional, you know, season with any professional team, especially with a team as bad as Montreal's. I think that this is a good opportunity for him to start from the bottom up. I mean, there's nowhere but up from here, and I really think that he needs to do exceptionally good if he ever wants to get a chance back into the NFL.
Yeah, and you said the key point you made there is a chance back in the NFL. And I'm gonna be honest, I don't see it. I really don't. And it kind of blew my mind like during this draft process that teams were going like pro days and watching him work out and stuff. I mean, like, there are, again, and I'm gonna bring up like again Colin Kaepernick. We've gone into discussions as to why, you know, why probably he's not in the league. He's a talented quarterback, but there are plenty of other quarterbacks. And to me, Johnny Manziel in the NFL was basically every GM's greatest fear, of a guy who he came in with baggage. He came in with like, oh, this guy parties, he goes out, he's into some bad stuff, and he proved every GM's like skepticism right. And I mean, even now, like, he keeps on saying like, oh, I'm changed. I don't buy it, because again, like I said earlier, that article, right? Like right after he got, I think it was by ESPN. I could be wrong, but I remember distinctly seeing he pinned the blame on the Browns immediately after he signed with a new team. So I think he's learned in terms of like, you know, he's obviously had his problems with alcohol and other substances, things like that. I think he might have learned from that, but I think overall, as in terms of behaving well enough to be considered like a starting quarterback, which is the franchise leader, the franchise centerpiece, I don't think he's learned enough to merit a conversation of him coming back to the NFL, even in like a backup role, because ultimately, yeah, a backup doesn't have as big a role, but the backup still is backup quarterback is still a very important position on a football team, and it's in some cases a big leadership position too. And I just don't see Johnny Manziel able to really lead a core of NFL players. Like, I mean, that's my two cents worth, Alec. I mean,
yeah, you can't really convince people that you've changed if all you have done is tweeted about how you've changed, because that's all I've seen from Johnny Manziel. He's tweeted like, oh, I'm a new man, like this is like Johnny Manziel 2.0, you know, all that stuff. I would rather see it like in person, you know, due to his mannerisms and his body language, you know, and his behavior throughout the games, rather than him just simply tweeting, yeah, I've changed. All right, then show us. Like, that's exactly what you need to do if you want people to take you seriously enough to want to sign you.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going back to that. He's getting the right now in his current situation. I think he's getting the benefit of the doubt because he has a former coach there, the coach that saw how good he was at A&M. And I think that's the only reason why he's really being put in the starting role. Even with the Owls being bad, like their starting quarterback, I believe, was actually Vernon Adams. And the game that led to him getting benched, there was some controversy around that too. Vernon Adams said some things like he's angry at the Montreal fans. But the game that ultimately, I guess, got Vernon Adams bench, he threw for 271 yards and a pick, and that was his game. I mean, not a mind blowing game by any means, but not like a game you would think like, okay, it's time to pull the plug and reevaluate. But I mean, I'm not sure about that. Manziel just rubs me the wrong way, and I don't understand why teams think that they should give him a second, third look, because ultimately we had that happen before.
Yeah, and like, and that also him calling out the Browns for saying that they didn't do a good enough job to, you know, prevent this from happening, that like every other GM is going to see this and they're going to be like, yeah, we definitely don't want this guy on our team, because if we do something that he doesn't like and then, you know, we trade him or we give him away to free agency, he's just going to call us out and try and make us look bad when we haven't even given our side of the story. All the GMs are going to look at him like, all right, well, you just eliminated any possibility of you ever getting back in the NFL just simply because that you said all this stuff trashing the Browns and stuff when they were the ones trying to help you. They put them into rehab. They did a whole bunch of stuff to try to prevent this situation from happening, and Manziel didn't listen.
And yeah, and you know, the other thing too with it is the Browns, maybe we'll take Johnny Manziel's word with a grain of salt. Maybe there was some things that the Browns maybe overlooked they didn't pay attention to. But I remember seeing reports of like Johnny Manziel would come in like drunk/hungover to practices. That's not the Browns' accountability issue. That's your own. And I understand. And again, I understand he had a problem with that stuff. But like, if you're the Cleveland Browns, you're going to suspend him. But like, they still can't control what he does outside of their organization's walls, outside of what the team does, practice, games, and things like that. So, I mean, I just don't get that.
Yeah, it's definitely something you should not be doing at the professional level. I remember hearing Darko Milicek, how I remember this was like a year ago, there was like an article released about how Darko Milicek would show up to practice, all of his practices, drunk. And it's just like, when you think about it, it's like, okay, are you even taking like this offer, like this professional league offer, like you're getting paid millions of dollars, you're gonna throw it away by simply doing that, by showing up to practices hungover/drunk? Like, mm-hmm. That's something I couldn't see even with the most immature people doing.
Yeah. All right, well, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we're gonna really dive into this whole Urban Meyer situation regarding his former wide receiver coach, Zach Smith, who is now had several allegations of domestic abuse between his two wives. But really going to dive right back into that when we come back. You're listening to WKR Current Sports. All right, we're back. So let's break. We're going to break down this whole Urban Meyer story. If you don't know, last week at during Big Ten Media Days, Urban, there was an issue with their wide receiver coach Zach Smith. He was accused of domestic violence against his ex-wife Courtney Smith. Now, during Big Ten Media Day, Urban claimed that he didn't hear anything about it, and things like that. So most people were taking his word for it at that point. Obviously there was need to be more digging done, but we were taking Urban's word for it. But today, a report came out from Brett McMurphy, covers college football, formerly of ESPN, and he let out this entire report, including he talked to Courtney Smith. He has pictures of the alleged abuse and all these other things. But basically, to break it down, how Meyer may have known about this. Courtney Smith, and this is all in McMurphy's report. Courtney Smith texted Urban's wife Shelly, who at one point in 2015, in a text exchange, said, "I'm with you. A lot of women stay hoping it will get better. I don't blame you. I want you to be safe. Do you have a restraining order? He scares me." These are all things that Urban Meyer's wife texted to Courtney Smith. Now, apparently, this goes far beyond like just Urban's wife. It goes on to other coaches and managers and things like that in the among the football team. She has She says she's talking to like the president of football operation, like things like that. And you know, there was a change of the police report that indicated October 26 per the Powell police that Zach Smith had been arrested. However, in a revised report, the Powell police said that the Rex box was no longer checked. A lot of conflicting things. So Alec, I want to get your opinion here. What do you think about this potential that not only Urban Meyer, but a whole lot of people at Ohio State knew about this stuff going on? How do you think that makes the university look?
I think that it looks awful on OSU and any faculty who saw this, who knew about this, and was complicit and not saying anything about it. I really do think that anyone who knew about this should be absolutely ashamed of themselves, because this has been something that's been going on for several years now. Like, maybe it would be understandable if this was happening this year, but like even that, like that doesn't even deserve that much like sympathy for the people who didn't or who knew what was going on. And so I have a text message here with what Smith is or Courtney Smith had to say. She texted this. She said, "He took me and shoved me up against the wall with his hands around my neck, something he did very often. My then 3-year-old daughter was clinging to my leg. It obviously registered with him what he was doing. So he took my then 5-year-old son and left. So I called the police," end quote. And I honestly already have a complete problem with people who put their hands on their significant other. But when you do that in front of kids, that can honestly scar them. And I'm concerned about the kids. I'm concerned about Courtney Smith. I'm also concerned that Zach Smith isn't in jail yet. He should be for this kind of stuff. And it's honestly shameful that people in professional sports, people who do that stuff, they get more of a leniency when it comes to the law. And I really don't think that they should be treated any different than some random person on the street who commits the same exact crime. I think that if you hand more stricter sentences to people like this with this high of like a ranking, like as a coach, then it will make other coaches and other players at least have that fear that their job will get, you know, getting rid of and they'll be thrown in jail, you know, because you see a lot of stories of this in professional sports and a lot of it being in football, and they don't hand serious enough punishments for these people because they simply provide the entertainment of, you know, the game, and they are in this marquee program, and that's why you don't see these punishments being handed out, and it's sickening. Because you see that, and you see this in society way too much, and especially in 2018, we're supposed to be making huge strides of progress. And to me, whenever I see these reports, I don't see that progress, and it's shameful to me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna read a little bit from this. It's a CBS Sports article from Ben Kercheval, and it kind of breaks down Brett McMurphy's report. And I'm going to just read from the article real quick right here. Quote, perhaps the most damning piece of information from the McMurphy report is an exchange between Courtney and Lindsay Volatoni, who in the weeks following the 2015 incident. Lindsay's husband is Brian Volatoni and considered one of Meyer's most loyal staff members, according to Brett McMurphy. This is the text exchange right here. Courtney, quote, Zach is trying to make me look crazy because that's what Shelly is saying he's doing. Lindsay. Urban just said that Zach denied everything. Courtney again. I hope Urban is smarter than that. Lindsay. Urban doesn't know what to think. Courtney again. I don't really care, you know. Lindsay, quote, don't worry about Herb. Now, the other interesting wrinkle to this whole thing, Alec, is that Urban, while he said he wasn't aware of the 2015 incidents, he said he was aware of another domestic violence incident occurring with Zach Smith again in 2009, while he was still an assistant at Florida. Now, and according to those documents, Zach Smith had an altercation with Courtney, who was at the time 3 months pregnant. And again, I don't understand then. If he knew about it in 2009, and at least according to the McMurphy report here, there were people who around him who knew about it, or people who were very close to him that knew about it, but he still kept this dude on the staff until literally it blew up last week. It blew up last week because it happened during Big Ten Media Day, and I really wonder if the story had blown up at an earlier time or a later time, would he have just kept him? Would he have just kept him on the staff, like things like that? Just bothering me.
Yeah, I know. And like this happened 9 years ago and he knew about it. He didn't even bother talking to him about it. He didn't even bother like bringing light to this. One of your staff members, someone that you're in charge of as head coach, you're in charge of all the other coaches to make sure that they're doing what you want them to do and to make sure that they're conducting themselves and behaving themselves while off the field. And if they're not, then you should call them out for it and say something's got to change or you're off the team. To me, I wouldn't even give them a chance. If I figured out that one of my coaches under me were committing something like this, especially with a pregnant child, I would immediately terminate that contract. I would say, get off my team. You don't deserve a place on the team. You shouldn't have to be on this team. Get out. Like, that's what I would be telling them. Because we as a society, we got to be way less complicit and way more aggressive when it comes to these kind of people that are in our society. They comprise all the ranks of our society, whether it's coaches, it could be a judge, it could be anyone. Like there's a lot of people out there that we don't know that are domestic violence abusers, and we as a society need to stand up against that more because this is a problem. This is a problem. And just like with the Me Too movement, people are standing up for that now. We need more people stepping up for the domestic violence issue because this is a pressing topic that's been happening all over this country and people have been way too complicit about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it's important to note that the Zach Smith, he was ultimately not charged for the 2009 incident. He was only charged for the 2015 one. But again, it kind of goes back to like, if you hear one of these things as a head coach, that should immediately raise a red flag. There should be a minimum, a suspension, something.
Yeah, you would think
some sort of punishment. Even if you're in the position as a head coach, and you're going to say, all right, I'm going to give this person, whoever they might be, they could be a player, coach, whatever, I'm going to give them a second chance. There's got to be some punishment, if nothing else, to deter, because now we see that he did it again in in 2015. It doesn't make much sense to me. Now, again, Zach Smith was terminated on Big Ten Media Day, or right before Big Ten Media Day, I should say. The Buckeyes replaced him with former Buckeyes wideout Brian Hartline, who also spent some time in the NFL. And Meyer said the decision was, quote, a tough call, but added it was in the best interest of our team. He did not elaborate if the media reports of Smith's past influenced his decision. And, you know, it kind of reminds me a bit of, you know, this past year at MSU, we had the Larry Nassar stuff. We had reports of if our basketball program knew about certain things that were happening. We had an allegation if the football team knew anything about certain sexual assault, sexual harassment, things of that nature that were happening behind closed doors. And I think it'll be interesting to see, because the Michigan State situation is a little bit different, because it was a compiling of several different unique stories coming together, and there was a lot of national backlash to it. There was a lot of pressing for all the details possible.
Rightfully so,
of course. And I it'll be interesting to see if we see that from if that happens to Ohio State, because thus far, in terms of like nationalism, and granted, this report, the McMurphy report, broke this morning, so maybe we'll give it some time. But like even the Zach Smith stuff, it's been mostly like local to Big Ten teams. It's been local to this area because Ohio State is a rival of Michigan, Michigan State. I haven't really seen national coverage of this, and you know, I'm just wondering if. I hope it gets national recognition, because again, it's a message that needs to get out there that these things happen in a ton of places, and it's an awful, awful, awful things that happen like this. But I wonder if it's a bad look for Ohio State, but I wonder if their name brand kind of shields them a bit from some of the critiques, some of the more harsh like criticisms. I mean, what do you think about that too?
I definitely do think that like a marquee team in the Big Ten, like Ohio State or U of M, they can get away with some of that stuff more so than a team like Illinois or a team like Rutgers. Like something like that would get, or like something that would happen at Rutgers or Illinois, yeah, that would get immediate national attention, whereas something out of Ohio State or U of M would not get that much attention, because the name brand does shield it to a certain extent. Like I did hear a story about the U of M. I don't remember if it was a trainer or a doctor or someone. They had I think it was like similar to Larry Nassar. They had sexually assaulted
a child pornography case that was kind of building up.
Yeah, it was something along the lines of that, but it didn't get any national attention, because I've never seen that on the news, and that happened earlier this year. Mm-hmm. It happened a couple months ago, and I've never seen ESPN cover that or put a picture of Jim Harbaugh or something like that on there, because, I mean, that's what ESPN did with Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio, even though that had nothing to do with them. They tried tarnishing both of their names by adding them in a picture and pooling them in with Michigan State, you know? And
I think it's important to note with the ESPN thing too, is just it was a lot of things coming together as one. And I think while they did their job in reporting on things I think they could have done a better job of like separating out the stories.
Yeah,
and the other thing too with the U of M, story, it's still kind of developing yet. And there was kind of swallowed in with the whole, it was dominating the news cycle at that time was the Nassar and then everything else that was going wrong at Michigan State.
Oh yeah, no, it was all happening at once. Yeah, and that's totally understandable. But it's like the ESPN skit that I saw was when they were talking about the whole Larry Nassar thing, and then they had the pictures of Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio. Yeah, that's just not right. No. You know, like like everything's going on, you know, you have to sympathize with the victims because those are the people who suffered through it, you know. But it's not okay when you're talking about Larry Nassar, something completely different that you bring up those two coaches, you know, when they didn't even bring it up at all during the whole thing, like that whole little skit that they did. And I definitely agree that the way they reported it, you know, like it's important to try to pull it all into one thing. But to put them two on that picture, it just didn't sit well with me.
And again, it will be interesting because again, the McMurphy report broke this morning, and we're gonna try. We'll try to get that up on our up on our Twitter page, a link to it. And it's really, again, really comprehensive. It goes into detail. Be warned, though, it is very descriptive of some of the abuse, the alleged abuse that took place. There are pictures in there. But again, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the next couple of days, because I'm just curious what repercussions there will be for Urban Meyer, if any, because now we're starting to see it's an eerie little trend in Big Ten right now, where we have it kicked off with like the Penn State stuff, where the coaches in the football program and the school knew about abuses that were happening but didn't say anything, and comes back to Michigan State, where a lot of people in the athletic department allegedly knew things were going on, but you know, may or may not have acted in appropriate manners. And now we have Ohio State. So it'll just be interesting to see how this story plays out over the next days and weeks. All right. We're going to change gears a little bit. We're going to hit our second break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Rick Pitino is apparently releasing a tell-all memoir. And Alec, it appears like he's trying to kind of save some of the little bit of legacy he has left.
Yeah, it's a failing attempt for sure, because you have no credibility at this point. Like, after people have uncovered how much you've been paying those recruits to come in, it's like, yeah, there's nothing really to save at this point.
We'll get into that, and if we have time, we'll also dive a little bit more into Jim Caldwell and John Fox being involved with the new look XFL. You're listening to WKR's Current Sports. All right, we're back. And next story we're going to kind of break down for you is Rick Pitino is ready to tell his story. I'm going to read a little bit from the ESPN article that announced this. Now, Rick Pitino, you may remember him as the kind of disgraced Louisville head coach who allegedly paid recruits. There was the prostitute scandal that they had with recruits as well. And you know, controversy has kind of followed Mr. Pitino around a bit, but he announced that he's going to be releasing a memoir. It says, Rick Pitino is ready to tell his story. The former Louisville coach has a memoir coming in September that will, quote, lay all of his cards on the table. Diversion Books announced Monday. Now, the book is co-written by Seth Kaufman. It is coming out September 4th, and it will cover everything from his time coaching with the Knicks, the New York Knicks, the Boston Celtics, to his triumphant and troubled career in the NCAA. So, Alec, I want to ask you first off, what do you think about this this attempt by Rick to, you know, kind of salvage whatever bit of, I guess, dignity or legacy or honor he has left?
I mean, you know, you always got to look at the other side and of the story, and this memoir, I think, will provide to some extent his side of the story, but like you can't just do something to the magnitude of this and expect people to want to look at your side of the story, because the evidence is all there. Like they have the evidence of him paying those people, you know, to come to Louisville. And I, quite frankly, I don't really think there's any way that he can recover from something like this. This is just too big of something to recover for.
Yeah, and you know, my question with it is really, what is his motive? What is his angle at this? If he's writing this memoir as, you know, remorseful, like he's trying to like lay all his cards on the table, like this is why I did what I did. And maybe bring it from the angle of, you know, I know this isn't right. I know this wasn't the right way to go about things, and kind of like as an apologetic tone. I think it will resonate a lot better. I think people will get more respect back for him. But if he comes at it from, the angle of, I did this, but so did everyone. If he tries to play the blame game, or if it comes off as more defiant, I really don't think it's going to bode well for him. I mean, I think he's already lost a ton of respect from just fan base in general, and it probably includes Louisville fans. He's lost a lot of that from fan bases. I think he's lost a lot of that from, you know, the basketball world in general. I don't think people see him at the same stature as they did before. And you know, ultimately, I think that the Louisville stuff compounded with all this other baggage that he has from, you know, past coaching experiences and things like that. I think it's really going to hurt his chances of getting back into the world of coaching at either a college or a professional level. Now I think there's a chance that maybe some desperate team that is, you know, been bottom of the barrel for, you know, a decade or something like that might kick the tires. But I don't think. But I mean, I don't think that any university, or any like or NBA team is gonna want to take the heat from this, because if it doesn't work out, it's gonna be bad. I mean, what do you think, Alec?
No, yeah, definitely. Their PR, like at whatever university is even thinking of hiring Patino, their PR people are gonna be like, No, there's absolutely no way we're hiring them, because the flack that they would get for it would not be worth the payoff, because Louisville had to vacate their 2013 national championship. Mm-hmm. And I know no college that is totally fine with taking that risk. Yeah, we're totally fine with hiring Patino, but it might cost us a national championship if we win one, you know, 2 years from now or something. So the payoff isn't worth it. And going back to your point on whether or not, like, what angle he's trying to take, I read an article from February 21st of this year talking about how he denied any allegation, and he said that he had no idea. He said, in 40 years of coaching, I have never been involved directly or indirectly in any effort to pay any money or extend any improper benefit to any recruit or recruit's family members or representatives. He says this, and so to me, the angle that I think he's going to take is he's going to try to displace the blame on some other people, or try mm-hmm. to say, look, I'm still innocent. These people are, they don't believe them. Like, don't believe what they're saying. And I think that he's definitely going to continue with that angle, and people are just going to respect him even less.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is the other thing with a quote unquote tell all memoir, Patino, with every single one of these allegations, has said, not me, nope, didn't do it, or it wasn't me, it was these other people, and has shifted the blame and hasn't been, like, exactly the most reliable for truth-telling. So, I mean, even if he does come off as apologetic, now that I think about it more, how much of that are you willing to believe as, like, as a college sports fan, as, you know, as anyone else who reads this book? I think he's dug himself almost too deep of a hole to get out of at this point. I mean, again, I think his coaching days are over, barring some college team really desperately needing something. And even then, if you're a college, because NBA really doesn't matter. If you're a college, are you willing to take that risk on a guy who, not only will you, if you win anything, you might lose all that, but also, you might get hit with other sanctions, like Louisville got smacked with. I mean, I don't know if anyone's going to go out on a limb for this guy.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't see it. And for someone who, after the 2013 national championship being vacated, he replied, "How do you take down a championship? They've earned it. You need to get an injunction." And to me, someone who reacts that way to, like, even though he didn't know what went on, even if there are other people involved with paying off those people, you should have the dignity to say, okay, maybe we didn't actually deserve this because of what we did to get those recruits. And
or as the head coach,
yeah,
you're running the show, take responsibility.
Because, exactly.
Because ignorance, because time and time again in sports and in life, if you're the man or the woman running the ship, ignorance is not an excuse.
Yeah, if you're the captain of the ship, you have to take responsibility no matter who does it, even if it's like a trainer or like an equipment manager who mm-hmm. does something that is not okay. You have to a certain extent be the babysitter over those people, and it's a shame that you have to be a babysitter over grown people, but grown people still do stuff like this that require you to take responsibility. And as head coach, you have to take the helm and take that responsibility.
Yeah. All right. And for our last story, again, we're gonna shift from basketball back to football again. Jim Caldwell and John Fox joining a group to help the reboot XFL, which they're eyeing up a time to return in, I believe it's 2020. Now, I do not understand this move at all. John Fox and Jim Caldwell are two of the most like conservative, like by the book coaches that the NFL has ever seen. Like we were talking about it Monday. Jim Caldwell doesn't have like shock plays, doesn't surprise. And if you look at the old XFL and even like the new one, what the XFL wants to be, and this I'm reading a little bit from a Pro Football Talk article here. The XFL wants to shape a league where the rules and style of play are upstart. So like up-tempo, they want fast plays, they want few interruptions. Why on earth did you get Jim Caldwell and John Fox then?
I don't know. Those are literally the most by-the-book, generic playing coach styles that you could possibly have in a league that does not want that at all. And the XFL, I saw some of the highlights in 2001. Jim Caldwell would definitely not fit in this kind of a league.
No.
You know, because you see the intensity and the up-tempo and the physicality that is involved in the XFL. And then you see Jim Caldwell's play style with the Detroit Lions these past couple seasons,
or even with the Colts. Even
oh
with the
yeah,
Colts,
exactly.
Peyton Manning, and it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't like a bad offense, but it wasn't. There's nothing exciting. It wasn't like
no.
It's Peyton Manning. It was Peyton Manning running the show. It wasn't like Jim Caldwell mixed up certain things. I just don't get it. Especially and again, the XFL they're kind of taking like a different approach than they did in 2001. They obviously want a faster paced game. They want a different set of rules from the NFL. They want to keep it going, keep people entertained. But like if you look also like their like personal policy conducts, they want to kind of distance them. It seems like they want to distance themselves in press releases earlier from the old XFL like bad boy style. They want like mm-hmm. they want good model players and such. And I guess if from that perspective, if you want to bring John Fox and Jim Caldwell on to handle, you know, player check to see if players are model citizens, I could kind of see that working a little bit better. But it's important to know, these guys aren't gonna, as of right now, these guys aren't like signing up to be coaches in the XFL. But to have them consulting on rules that are targeting making the game, that are making the XFL's game better
and exciting,
Yeah, I'm not sold on that at all.
I don't see how in any situation this would work out, because Jim Caldwell's playing style is literally what Vince McMahon would not want.
No.
For his league.
No, it's a slow, methodical play. And even with like, and even, I mean, I think we're overlooking John Fox too. John Fox is a fairly by the books guy too. I mean, his defenses were usually pretty good in the NFL, but it's not like it wasn't anything outlandish, something we hadn't really seen before. And I think that's what the XFL is trying to do. I think they're trying to do something that we haven't seen before, because otherwise, why are they even in, if they're not trying to do that, why are they in business? Because the NFL is still king of football
by far.
And it's not even close. The NFL has squashed basically every single opponent.
Arena football.
Every single opponent that has come up to the plate to face them, with the exception of the AFL in the 70s. I mean, that's the only, and they merged.
Yep.
I mean, that's the only real competition the NFL has ever had that it, that they actually had to work around. But and the other thing too is that kind of surprised me. I don't know if you heard about this too, but there's another kind of upstart professional football league that's coming out in the next within the next 2 years, because I believe it's the Alliance of American Football or something like that.
I think I've definitely heard about that, but I didn't read into anything regarding that. But I did that name does ring a bell to me, but I haven't seen anything in terms of that.
Yeah. But with that one, it seems like that is more that up and coming league, that it's set to commence. It's set to commence play February 2019, right after the Super Bowl. That seems like more of a fit for John Fox and Jim Caldwell, because their marketing isn't you know, we're going to be this outlandish, you've never seen this before kind of deal. It's more of, hey, there's a dead period in football from the time the Super Bowl ends till free agency. So like a month, it's free agency draft. Even then, you're not watching football on TV. You're watching the next crop come in, or you're watching the changeups in teams. And it just seems like it would be a better fit for a Jim Caldwell, for a John Fox, where, again, more by the books guys, and it could work. I think it could work out for them. Just looking at the head coaches for this other league, Alliance of American Football. You got Brad Childress, who coached for the Vikings when Brett Favre was there. You have Mike Singletary, coach for the 49ers. You have Steve Spurrier. You have Mike Riley. You have all these. You have all these guys who are, you know, again, more traditional football. And I just don't get why if you're Jim Caldwell and you're John Fox, if that's your brand of coaching, why did you try to go into something a little bit more experimental and something that honestly I don't think will have staying power? I think the Alliance League could very well have staying power because it hits a dead spot when there's no football. I mean, any thoughts on that?
Honestly, from their perspective, I mean, if you see like the hype building up behind the XFL, and if you see, you know, like all the commercials, you know, regarding it, and you see Vince McMahon doing excellent promo on it, then, you know, I would honestly pick that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like we're just about out of time. Thank you for joining us today on Current Sports. We will be back tomorrow after a very nice 23-hour break. Until then, be easy, people.